Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Ruth Clark. Ruth, you told me in an email recently that your new project combines a suite of short stories and a memoir. Is memoir something new for you?
Technically and formally, yes, but several of my short stories I have embroidered around memories and fictionalized them. My current project, Reflections Without a Mirror, is a memoir with fictional vignettes of a family with whom I lived in Mexico City, the woman I just read about, Maria Teresa.
Why do you think memoirs have become such a popular form among readers in the last few years? And why are you personally so interested in memoir now?
We're an aging population. Memories are important, and the act of remembering is equally important. Dredging up the past is a great mental exercise, and I'm thrilled with how much I can remember. In the 1970s, we built a coffee house, and over the course of 3 or 4 days this winter, I was able to come up with all of the performers who had played on that stage. And just patting myself on the back, doing it. It was
that's amazing.
It
where did you have the
London
coffee?
London, Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
It was called Smale's Pace. It was there for many, many years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's magic in writing memoirs. I went through chronologically my journals, and a couple of times when I typed in a person's name into my computer, the next message on my email would be from that person that I hadn't heard of in like 10, 15 years. So there's a bit of conjuring. As you stir up your memories, I think that other things are let loose, and it's a great exercise.
It's interesting how you think of somebody after a long time and suddenly you find yourself back in contact with them. That does happen, and it does seem like magic, doesn't it?
It does.
So tell us a little about your memoirs and why you chose to write about this particular part of your life and experience in Mexico, I mean.
When we sold most everything we owned and moved to Mexico in 2008, I stored a filing cabinet with friends. In it were close to 40 years of journals. We returned from Mexico 2 years later, and when I saw those stacks of notebooks, I knew I had to do something with them, if only to rid them from family or loved ones who came across them after my demise. A couple of years later, I loaded them up into a Tupperware tub and took them to Costa Rica, where I sifted through the years, tossing emotional dross and putting my writings in chronological order, transcribing the salient points, discarding the soppy. When I had written in my journals, I'd been going forward with little time for reflection. And during this exercise, I learned a lot about myself. And as I was doing it, I found stories emerging, vignettes of family members and friends. And one good friend who has known me for more than 40 years told me that my life was more interesting than fiction and pointed to my hitchhiking to Mexico. So that's why I'm doing it for him.
I see. And so your memoir starts with you hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
actually, that was a huge thing to do. Were you all on your own?
No, I was with a friend, but hitchhiking was so much easier than, you know. Yeah, I did. You'll have to read the book to see,
okay,
you know, the risks I did take. But yeah, and wait for it, because I don't know that it's going to be a book for a while. I'll read to you if you want, Felicity.
Okay. And do you think then that you may write further pieces in the same vein?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. The exercise is aerobics for the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds promising.
Yes.
So how do you get your writing done, Ruth?
I try to wedge myself in between household chores and things, and oft times want to water the plants more than I want to write. But If I'm not writing in front of the computer, I'm thinking and cogitating. But I run away every winter for 5 months, and I get a lot of writing done there because I'm no longer Susie Homemaker or Betty Crocker. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to worry about food or care or feeding.
Uh-huh. You have a favorite place to go?
Costa Rica right now. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. How about reading to us now? Are you going to read from your memoir?
I am. This is called Reflections Without a Mirror, and it's a memoir. It starts in 1968, but this is 1971. October 30th. The bus station in Mexicali was like a barn, but void of animal heat. I was wearing only a cotton dress, sandals, and a light poncho, and was chilled to the bone. I read to pass the time. 2 hours before the bus was to leave, I raised my head when I heard a familiar language. "You're a long way from home, aren't you?" the man asked. It was so good to hear English again after what seemed like an eternity, but had only really been a few hours. Emboldened, I asked where he was going and if he had room to take me. He did, and the deal was clinched when I said I could drive. We drove all that night. His name was Richard Stanton, from California, and he serviced movie projectors, was going to the Baja, could drive me to Mazatlan, about 1,200 miles south, where I could catch the bus to Mexico City. He was 45, divorced, and talked incessantly about sex until I finally made a comment which halted it for a while. I realized I was taking a big chance traveling alone with a man, but 48 hours on a bus without being able to communicate would have been just as nerve-wracking, if not as dangerous. There were many crosses along the sides of the road where the drivers had died, perhaps buried where they fell. I would learn later that on the Day of the Dead, families would visit these sites, bring flowers, rice, beans, and tequila for their departed. At one cross, near a truck stop, Stanton pulled up by a shrine. He idled, bowed his head, and I guess said a silent prayer. We drove on in the moonlight. Ahead of us lay the black hills, beyond them a glorious blood-red sunrise. A hearty breakfast of bacon and eggs with tortillas and rice was the only stop we made that day and the only meal we ate. With each mile we advanced south, the air became noticeably warmer, more humid. When we stopped for a rest, we had just passed a submerged village. Many of the bridges had washed out in the rains that had been there only 2 days before. We had to make several detours to find passable roads. Burros, wild horses, and cattle grazed along the roadsides and often just stood in the middle of the road. It was so sad to see people that had worked so hard to grow their crops, build huts and bridges, to have it all swept away. At one point on the road, I saw a tarantula the size of a black desk telephone. October 31st. Happy Halloween. I awoke to find us 100 miles from Mazatlan, where I would catch a bus. We arrived about 9 o'clock and at a seaside restaurant ordered plates of mango, papaya, and oranges. Cornflakes. While we were eating, Stanton accused me of robbing him, and when I swore I hadn't, he asked to borrow $10 to pay for breakfast, said he was trying to get some money wired to him and that he would mail it to me. Fat chance. All Saints Day. I was cutting it close. It'll take another 24 hours to get to Mexico City. It's early morning. I should be all right. Father Bill's plane wasn't due in Mexico until 6 o'clock tonight. Again, there were no Americans or Canadians on the bus. At a rest stop, a Mexican man approached me and started to speak to me in Spanish. When I told him I didn't understand, he switched to English. His name was Antonio. He was a migrant worker returning to Acapulco. He wanted me to write a letter to his girlfriend in California, and as payment, he would make sure that I got to the airport. Now I have someone to talk to during stops. By our third pit stop, I'd finished Antonio's letter and read him how much he loved her, missed her, and couldn't wait until the following season when he would return. He blushed, smiling, and thanked me. In Mexico City, Antonio bought me breakfast and thanked me once again for writing his letter. He found a young Mexican boy to guide me, giving me 5 pesos to pay him when I reached the airport. Although the boy couldn't speak English, we managed to communicate. And then I saw a bus with Aeropuerto across the windshield, so I flagged it down, bid the kid adios, and gave him the money. At the airport, I had lunch, read, and wrote in my journal to pass the time until Bill's plane arrived. Mexicans arriving were greeted by their joyous, boisterous families, many of whom had hired mariachi bands to welcome them. Bill finally arrived at 6 p.m., surprised to see me there. We drank some beer, and he caught me up on news from home. We took a taxi into the city and found hotel rooms for $7 each. In the restaurant, we continued to talk. We crashed early, and in the morning, his friends Alejandro and Gloria Arena came to collect us. Alejandro wove in and out of midday traffic to deliver us to the Aguilar house. Fumes from the congested traffic burned my eyes. The dirt, poverty, and squalor shocked my senses as we raced through the crowded streets. Then, like waking from a bad dream, we arrived on a quiet treed avenue in Colonia Ermita, where young people moved their basketball net to allow us passage to the last house on the block. Señora Aguilar and her other daughter stood at the entrance of the house to greet us. Señora Aguilar introduced herself and Katerina, who clung to her in the dim light of the spacious entry. She bowed and invited us into their home, chattering in Spanish to Bill, who then translated for me. When we entered the house, I saw an elderly woman seated in one of the armchairs. I didn't understand what Señora Aguilar said when she took me to meet her mother, Doña Isabella Teresa. During the introductions, the old woman took both my hands in hers and smiled. Señora Aguilar excused herself and bustled to the kitchen to prepare dinner. While she fussed with clanging pots and pans, Bill and I chatted in the living room, a distance from the old lady. "You remember when Abuela took your hands in hers?" he whispered with his chin down, looking at me. "Yes, I thought it was sweet." "Well, maybe not so sweet," he grins mischievously. "Mama explained, or shall we say justified, your presence with me." "What's that supposed to mean?" sounded chauvinistic to me. "She told her mother that you were a nun from the Order of the Sacred Heart, that you are my secretary." Clad in blue jeans, t-shirts, and sandals, I laughed at the notion.
Thank you, Ruth. And all best wishes for your new project.
Well, thank you very much.
We don't have to wait forever for it, you know.
I hope you don't.
Yeah. So where will readers be able to find the short story you read us?
Now, that's in the memoir. Other short stories have been published in anthologies by Hidden Brook Press. So you might go online, www.hiddenbrookpress.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs, and you can leave them there on the website. You may even get a reply. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.